It's very general. I have a rope, and the rope is wrapped around an object, which could be a disc. Let's call this point Q here. Let's call this point P. This is the center of the object. The object could be a sphere or a cylinder. And the moment of inertia about that point C, about the axis of rotation perpendicular to the paper, equals kmr squared. If this were a solid sphere, then k would be 2/5. If it were a solid cylinder or a disk, then it would be 1/2. And if it were a hollow sphere, then k would be 1/3. And all these combinations you can look up in tables. And so the question now is, what is the acceleration of the center of mass as it goes down? What is the tension T in this wire, not to be confused with a period? And what is omega as a function of time as the thing starts to unroll? And of course, you can add to that, what is the speed of the center of mass as a function of time? The thing is going to rotate around with angular velocity omega. And this is clearly a situation of no slip. If I make an enlargement here, that means if it rotates over an angle d theta, and if the rope never slips here, then it moves, the rope moves over an angle ds, then it's immediately obvious that d theta times r, which is the radius, equals ds. Divide left and right by dt, and you find omega r equals v, which is the tangential velocity of the rope here. But that is also the same as vc, because there is no slip. And if you take the derivative of this, so that omega dot becomes alpha, then you get alpha times r equals the acceleration of the center of mass. And I will repeatedly use today that alpha equals the acceleration of the center of mass divided by r. So that is a necessary condition for no slip. Let's put the all the forces in here. Here we have mg, and here we have the tension T. And that's all there is on this object. Newton's law must hold. F equals ma. This holds for all the sources on the system. Acceleration of the center of mass. So what do we see if we take mg positive down? Mg minus T, which is up, must be m times ac. That is my first equation. And I have two unknowns. I have T and I have A as unknown. But now we get that the torque relative to point C equals I relative to point C times alpha. That is the moment of inertia through this axle. The torque relative to point C is T times this perpendicular distance r, so I can write down this is r times t, and that is also ic, which we know is kmr squared, but let me write down km r squared times alpha, but alpha is ac divided by r, a of c divided by r, and this is my second equation. I have two equations with two unknowns, and you can solve easily for A, and you can solve easily for T. And I will leave you with the massaging, but I will give you the answers because they're kind of interesting. A equals G times 1 plus K, and the tension equals K mg divided by 1 plus K. And what you see here is that the acceleration, independent of the mass, is only a function of geometry. It only depends on k. Now I will jump a surprise on you, something you may not have known. And I don't blame you if you don't know this. If I have a pure roll situation, that means if this object has a pure role, and we discussed earlier what we mean by pure role, and this is radius r, and it's going around with angular velocity omega, and it has a velocity of the center of mass vc, then, for one thing, vc equals omega r. But there's something else which is interesting. If I look at the rotation about this point P, something I will not prove, then this motion of this object as it goes into pure roll is also a perfect rotation of this whole object about this point, with exactly that same omega. I don't prove it, maybe you were willing to do that, but I would assume you take my word for it. That is the reason, as perhaps you remember where I mentioned earlier, that the velocity here equals 0, and that the velocity here equals 2 vc. And if you were to take a position somewhere here, then this is now the r that you have to take, this is the pivot point you have to take, and so v at that location relative to point P equals omega r, you take the same omega, and so you get a vector in that direction. And it's a very complicated motion, but what is interesting, that it is also a pure rotation about this point with angular velocity omega, except that now the distances are depend on where you are on the circumference. If we take this for granted, there is something that you can do that is very nice. We have taken the torque relative to point C. Why not take the torque relative to point Q, which is also the same as the torque relative to point P? You will see there is no difference, because it is R cross F. Since T goes through P and Q, you only deal with this force, and it is the perpendicular distance. So the torque relative to point P, which is also the torque relative to point Q, equals mgr, as I just explained. And that, of course, is the moment of inertia relative to that point Q, or relative to that point P, times alpha. And alpha, you can write down A divided by R, if you want that. What is now this moment of inertia? We use the parallel axis theorem, and so we get mgr equals the moment of inertia about the center of mass, which is kmr squared, plus the distance to the new axis squared times the mass. So plus m r squared. This is simply a application of the parallel axis theorem. I have this times alpha now, and so this becomes times a divided by r. And what you have here, maybe to your surprise, one equation with one unknown. There is no t in here even. And when you work this out, you will find exactly the same that you found before. And maybe you find this even easier. You find A equals G divided by 1 plus K. And if you want to calculate what T is, go to the previous part of the problem. You substitute A in the equation for T, and obviously you'll find exactly the same answer. Let us take some cases whereby K is 2/5. Just to give you some feeling for it, A would be roughly 0.7 g, and the tension would be roughly 0.29 g. So this would be a solid sphere. If I take K equals 1/2, which would be a solid cylinder, A would be 2/3 g, which is very close, by the way, and T would be about 1/3 mg. There must be an mg here. And that is also very close to that value. So you see, it doesn't make all that much difference whether you take a solid sphere or whether you take a solid disk. Interesting all by itself. Okay, now we start this system. So we have this object, and we drop it from a position y equals 0, and we drop it over a distance h. And we now want to know what the angular velocity is at which the object reaches this h, this height h. So you can call this omega for y equals h. You can also calculate the velocity of the center of mass for y equals h. I'll first do it in the clumsy way, and then I will do it in a better way. The motion in this direction is accelerated, constant acceleration in a, in the y direction. So y of t equals y0, which is 0, plus 1 half at squared, and that equals 0. That equals h. That's the distance that it travels. And so you find immediately that t equals the square root of 2h divided by a. What is the velocity of the center of mass at any moment in time? Well, that is at, because it starts with zero speed. So that is a times this t, which is the square root of 2h over a. So that is the square root of 2ah. And so the speed of the center of mass after this thing has unrolled over a distance h would be the square root of 2gh divided by 1 plus k. So now we also have the velocity. What is omega when y equals h? Well, v equals omega r. So omega equals this number divided by r. So I get 1 over r times the square root of 2gh divided by 1 plus k. And notice that the velocity that it reaches when it has unrolled over a distance h is again independent of mass. It only has the geometry in k. And this is the angular velocity. And again, the angular velocity only depends on geometry, which is maybe not all that intuitive. I have a yo-yo, and the yo-yo has two discs, and this disc has radius r, and this inner disc, this inner little portion here, which we assume has no mass, has radius little r, and this one has mass m, and this one has also mass m. These two are identical. The yo-yo is released at zero speed. It's going to rotate around this axis. Let's call this point C in the middle. Now, the moment of inertia about this point C rotating about this axis is twice the moment of inertia of disks rotating about their axis of symmetry. Since I have two disks, I must multiply by 2 times 1 half mr squared. So this is mr squared. So that's the moment of inertia about that axis. Now I'm looking at this situation from the side. This is this inner core, radius r, and the rope is wrapped around this inner core. And this is the outside radius, capital R. And so the forces we have here, 2mg, remember, this was mass m, and this was mass m, so we have to double that. And here we have the tension T in this rope. Clearly, we have again alpha equals A over R, because we have pure rho, so we can use that wherever we want to. We're going to apply Newton's law. The system is going to be accelerated downward. So 2mg minus t must be 2ma. That's equation number one. And in the torque situation, I will take the torque relative to point C, which is the moment of inertia about point C times alpha. And that equals little r times t, if I take the moment of inertia relative to point C, is this perpendicular distance little r times t, and that equals the moment of inertia about C, which was mr squared times a divided by r. So I have already eliminated alpha. This is the second equation. So here we have two equations, and we have two unknowns, and you should be able to solve for both a, and you should be able to solve for t. Now we come to problem 10.3. We have a human skater, and we assume that the human person is a cylinder, which is perhaps not very friendly. Here are her legs. And it rotates about the center, which I call the center z, with angular velocity omega 1 in the beginning situation. The mass of the person is m. And the person has arms, length l, and there is at each end a mass m. L, and here is a mass m. The moment of inertia about the axis z in position 1 equals 1 half mr squared, which is the moment of inertia of the cylinder, plus 2ml squared, whereby this is obviously the additional moment of inertia due to these two arms. Now the person pulls her arms in. Let's assume that she is not cheating, and that there are no external torques here at the ice, which I'm not so sure about at all. And so I'm going to get an IZ2, which is again 1 half mr squared. But when these arms have been brought in, and these masses are at a distance little r, this is capital R, then I would have plus 2m r squared. And that's the moment of inertia, which it is right now. And this moment of inertia is less than IZ1. If the person pulls her arms in and is not cheating here, then IZ1 omega 1 must be IZ2 omega 2. In other words, angular momentum is conserved if there are no external torques. And therefore, omega 2 must be larger than omega 1. If you take a modest case, whereby the person's weight is 60 kilograms, no insult implied, and you take L equals 1 meter, and you take M equals 5 kilograms, and you take R equals 0.2 meters. Oops, I just watched this tape. I wrote little r, but obviously I meant capital R. Sorry for that. Whenever you see little r, think of it as being capital R. Then you will find that this portion of the moment of inertia is only 1.2, and that this portion is substantially larger, is 10. And so in the new position, this again is 1.2, but in the new position, this is only 0.4. So the moment of inertia has enormously decreased. The moment of inertia has decreased by a factor of 7, and so omega 2, which is the omega after the person pulls her arms in, is about 7 times omega 1. So she rotates about 7 times faster, which is by no means trivial. If you look at the situation of kinetic energy, you will find to your surprise that the kinetic energy has increased. It's immediately obvious, because the kinetic energy of rotation equals 1 half I, about the z-axis, omega squared. Now, I omega is constant. So if you take the kinetic energy in situation 2, when the arms are in, divided by the situation when the arms are not in, you will find immediately omega 2 divided by omega 1, which is approximately 7 in our special case, because I omega is constant. Where does this come from? Well, as this person is holding her arm stretched, she will have to pull on her arm to hold that mass in her hand and making it go around in a circle. And we call that force the centripetal force. Here are her fingers, here is that mass, and there is a centripetal force necessary to hold it in. And the distance over which she moves it, S, is also in. Now this is provided by her muscles. So it's clear that she has to do work as she moves this force closer to her body. And it's exactly that work that shows up in terms of kinetic energy, increase in kinetic energy of rotation. Now, of course, you can go back. You can stretch your arms again, and then your angular velocity would go down again, and you can pull them in, and your angular velocity would go up again. I have a slight surprise for you, though, that I know from skaters that they do cheat a little. Well, I wouldn't call it a cheat. They actually are also torquing with their skates on the ice in order to make this effect even stronger. Angular velocity increase is larger than what you would expect only on the basis of their pulling their arms in. We have a position vector r0, which is 3x minus 2y plus 7z. If you want to see it somehow, x, y, z, then we have 3 units in the plus x direction, 2 units in the minus y direction, and so the object I'm trying to make you see it three-dimensional. So the position vector coming from the origin O is then pointing to this location. This is r of O. And this distance in the minus direction is 2, this distance in the plus direction is 3, and this distance is 7. Now, the object also has a velocity, which is 1 meter per second in the plus x direction, 1 meter per second in the plus y direction, and 2 meters per second in the minus z direction. I prefer to write for y, for I, x roof, and for j, y roof, and so on. I prefer that. And the question now is, what is the angular momentum relative to O? That is, per definition, R relative to O times the momentum P. Momentum is not relative to an object. So this is M times X, Y, Z. This is just application of cross product, 3 minus 2, 7. I'm sure by now you know how to do that. Minus 2, and out of that comes M times minus 3x plus 13y plus 5z. So now you have the angular momentum at time t equals 0 relative to the origin. Now there's going to be a force acting on this object, and the force is always pointing in the plus y direction, and it has 3 newtons. Now a lot of things are going to happen. The torque is going to change in time. The torque at zero is no longer the torque at time t equals 10. In order to know what the torque is, since the torque at any moment in time is the position at any moment in time cross f, we first want to calculate what the new position is of this object at time t. Well, let's look at the x direction. In the x direction, there is no acceleration, but we have xt equals x0 plus v0x times t. And that is 3 plus t, and I put the x roof here to remind you that it is in the x direction. The 3 comes from this 3. And the t comes from this 1. This is the velocity, v0t, but it is plus 1, so it's plus 1 times t is t. Now you can also write down in the y direction, where there is an acceleration, y0 plus v0yt plus 1/2 ay t squared. And that becomes minus 2 plus t plus 3/10 times t squared, and that is in the y direction. Why 3/10? Well, the mass of the object was 5, and so we need the acceleration, which is 3/5, but we have a half here, so that becomes 3/10. And then in the z direction, so this was the y direction, so in the z direction we know the position, and I leave you with that to easily show that this is 7 minus 2t in the z direction. So we know now at any moment in time what the r vector is, because the r vector is of course the 3 plus t times x plus this unit plus this component in the y direction plus this component in the z direction. And so we're now well on our way, because now we can calculate what the torque is at any moment in time, x, y, z. Remember that the torque at any moment in time is the position vector at time t cross f. F is not changing, but r of t is changing. That is 3 plus t, as we just calculated, minus 2 plus t plus 3/10 t squared, and right here there's almost no room for it, 7 minus 2t under the z component. And here we have 0, 3, 0. And when you work this out, you will find that tau, as a function of t, has only a component in the x direction, and it has only a component in the z direction. It has no, oh, this is a 9, plus 3t times z. It has no component in the y direction. Now, the LDT equals tau at any moment in time. Now you're being asked, what is L10? So what you have to do now, you have to do an integration. This is a vector. So the integration that I'm going to do is dl from L0, this is an L, to L10, and that must be equal to the integration of tau dt from time t equals 0 to time t equals t. And these are vectors. And so I have to do an integral of this thing versus time. Keep in mind that this becomes minus 21t, and this becomes 3t squared. This becomes 9t, and this becomes 3/2t squared. So I'm going to get for this integral minus 21t plus 3t squared in the x direction, and I have to evaluate that between time t equals 0 and 10. And I have in the z direction, if I integrate it, 9t plus 3/2t squared, I have that in the z direction. And I have to also evaluate that between 0 and 10. So you can evaluate the value tau, and you can substitute now for the t10 and t0, so you'll find tau 10. Well, you also know that L10 minus L0 equals tau at that moment 10. So now you in business, you have L10 equals that torque at moment time t equals 10, which we just calculated, plus L0. We calculated L0 earlier. And if we didn't do it, then I'm sure you can do that, because L0 is simply R0 cross P. And so you add these two vectors, and out pops the answer, which is exactly the answer what I found in the book. It was a little bit of massaging, but I just was lucky and I got the right numbers. What have I learned? I haven't learned much physics, to be frank with you, but I must admit I've learned some vector algebra, perhaps. So in that sense, it is useful that you see this. You should be able to do these problems. But frankly speaking, I can't get excited about these problems. I have a car which has mass m. It has four wheels. Each wheel has radius r, and it has moment of inertia c, rotating about the center of axis of symmetry. And we have pure roll. That's a given. So there is no slip. That's a given at this moment. And the speed is constant. Well, here we have that wheel. It's rotating around with angular velocity omega. This is the center C. This is the radius R. And there is a velocity V of the center of mass in situation 1, which is omega 1 times R. This is one particular moment. That's why I give it a 1. This is only true because there is pure roll. Otherwise, this would not be true. What is the moment, the angular momentum? The angular momentum about point C, and I refer to moment 1. That is I, moment of inertia about point C, about this axis, times omega 1. And so L, at that moment in time, in the beginning, equals the moment of inertia divided by VC1 divided by R. So that is not too difficult. What is the net force on this system? Oh, the error should be here. That must be 0, because the speed is constant. So there cannot possibly be a net force on this system. Now we are suddenly going to brake, and we lock the wheels. And we do this braking until the velocity of the center of mass has reached a value VC2. And the question now is, what is the acceleration of the car? So here is now this wheel screeching on the road, because the wheels have been locked. So this still has velocity VC1. The center of mass has VC1. And the bottom has VC1, because I've blocked it and everything is going with VC1. At least we will assume, to good approximation, that it's true. And here I will have a frictional force, which is the maximum value possible, because the whole thing is skidding. Well, the friction maximum and I'll take all four wheels together, it makes no difference, is the total mass of the car times G, which is this normal force. All these four wheels together must push back upwards with a force mg, times the friction coefficient mu k, which is the kinetic friction coefficient because it's sliding, and that must be ma. And so you find immediately that the acceleration, in this case it's the deceleration, equals mu k times g. So the car experiences an acceleration in the same direction as the frictional force, it slowed down. And so if you take mu k 2/10, then you would get a equals 1/5 g. It's a substantial reduction, a substantial deceleration. Now comes the question, what is the distance that the car travels from the moment C1 until the moment that it has reached this speed VC2? Well, VT in general equals V0 plus AT. This is a general equation. At the end, when it has reached this velocity at VT, I will call this VC2. At time t equals 0, I call it VC1. The acceleration is negative, so I'll put a minus sign in. I know that A now should be positive, because this minus sign already takes into account that it is in this direction. So we get minus A, and let's call the time that this has occurred, that this velocity has been reached, let's call that time t2. And so you will find immediately that the time that it takes equals VC1 minus VC2 divided by mu k times g. So this is how long it takes for this car under the influence of this squeaking friction to slow down to this velocity. Now is the question, what is the distance traveled? Well, that's relatively easy now, because x at that time t2 minus x at time t0, general equation which we had early in the course, equals v0t plus 1/2 a t2 squared. This is the moment then that we have reached this velocity. If we substitute for in the values that we have, this was vc1, oh, this should be t2 by the way, times t2 minus, I'll put in a minus sign, 1/2 a t2 squared. I put in a minus sign because now I'm going to put in this equation for a positive sign. And when I calculate this, this is the distance traveled. I know what a is, I've just calculated a. So I find then that the distance traveled equals 1/2 times vc1 squared minus vc2 squared divided by mu k times g. And so this is the distance traveled. Notice that if mu k goes up, that the distance traveled goes down, and that is quite pleasing, that is quite intuitive, I would say. Now, I have an interesting problem for you. I want you to try this at home. This is a yo-yo. The yo-yo has an inner radius r1, and it has an outer radius r2. I attach to this yo-yo a string, which is wrapped around the inner core, and I'm going to pull, and I'm going to pull at an angle alpha. If alpha is small enough, the yo-yo will come in this direction. If alpha is large enough, the yo-yo will move away from me in this direction. By no means so obvious, but I will show it to you. And I want you to prove it at what angle, depending upon R1 and R2, this is going to happen. I have here a box. I have here a yo-yo. And I'm going to pull at a very small angle alpha. And what do you see? The yo-yo moves in my direction. I'm now going to increase the angle alpha substantially. I'm going to pull again, and what do you see? It moves away from me. Isn't that interesting? So depending upon the angle alpha, The yo-yo comes to you or goes away from you. There has to be friction here. Do it in your dormitory. You can do it on the floor. And you'll be amazed. But what is more important than anything else, what is that angle of alpha at which the transition occurs from moving towards me to moving away from me? We have a car which has mass capital M, and it has four wheels each with little m. In 7.5 seconds, it goes from zero speed to 27.8 meters per second, which is 100 kilometers per hour. The average acceleration is therefore delta v divided by delta t. It's a one-dimensional problem, so this is 27.8 divided by 7.5, which is 3.7 meters. Per second squared. In case there is pure roll, but only in case there is pure roll, the angular acceleration alpha is a divided by r, so that is about 14.8 radians per second squared. If this is the wheel, and this is the center c, and this is the radius r, and it moves with a speed v of c, which is this 27.8 meters per second, what is the torque relative to this point c during these 7.5 seconds? Well, the torque relative to point C is the moment of inertia about point C times alpha. This is the rotational representation of what we earlier would have called F equals ma. The moment of inertia about point C, if the wheel can be approximated by a disk, equals 1/2 mr². And so I find that the torque about point C is about 6.94 newton meters. Now comes the hard part. I now have to put in all the forces that act on the wheel. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to ignore all the forces that go through the center of the wheel. Let me first make a drawing of the wheel seen from the side. Here is a gear, and here is a gear which is attached to the engine. And this wheel, this gear, is driving this gear. And let me look now from this side and make another drawing. So here is the gear, which has radius little r. This is C. And this is the wheel, which has radius capital R. The gear is going to push, let's say, at this moment, with a force f of g. Now that gear force comes from the gear that is attached to the engine, and so action equals minus reaction, so there will be also a force on this gear in this opposite direction. But the wheel will only see the red one that I have drawn. Now I ignore all forces that go through the center C. And the reason why I do that is because they do not contribute to the torque about point C. But there are forces through that point C. There have to be. First of all, there's gravity. And there is the normal force from the road. But there are other forces through that point C. I want you to appreciate that. Because the sum of all forces in the x direction, if you take all the forces of the wheel into account, must be m times a, which is the acceleration of the car. And the sum of all forces in the y direction must be zero. And in order to meet this necessary condition, you will need forces through the center of C. In any case, the wheel wants to rotate in this direction, so the wheel will push here on the road in this direction, and the road will push back with a force which we call, per definition, the frictional force. Now, you may say, well, why is the force of the gear in this direction? Why is the force of the gear not in this direction? Well, it does not matter where you put it. You can put it here, or you can put it here, or you can even put it here. Think of yourself, which is not a very nice idea, of sitting in a wheelchair. and you grab the inner rim of the wheels and you push them forward. It doesn't matter whether you pick them up at the top and push them forward, or whether you pick them up at the bottom and pull them towards you. So it doesn't matter whether you this with your hands or whether you that with your hand. As long as you grab onto this circle with radius little r and apply a force. What now is the net force on the total car, plus wheels, everything? Well, this force here, the gear force, will be cancelled out by this force on this gear. Action equals minus reaction, so this one doesn't count. All the vertical forces cancel out, because there's no acceleration in the vertical direction, and so what is left over, whether you like it or not, is only this force that is responsible for the car being accelerated. And so I have four times that force, because I have four wheels. That is the total mass of car plus wheels times A. Well, I know this, I know this, and I know this, and I find that the frictional force is about 1167 newtons. If there were no friction, the car would not accelerate. A would be zero. And you are used to that. The wheels would be start to spin, by the way, but there would be no acceleration of the car. And we know that. We live in Boston in the winter when it's slippery on the road and you start your car, the wheels spin, but the car doesn't get anywhere. And you can see that here, because this frictional force will be zero, but you have this red force that will spin up the wheels. Frictional force will be zero, A will be zero. Now comes the last part. The torque relative to that point C, we know it was 6.94 newton meters. This is a clockwise torque. It rotates the wheel in this direction. This gear force is also acts like a clockwise torque. And so this is plus clockwise F gear times little r. This acts counterclockwise, that opposes this torque. And so that is minus F friction times capital R, which is counterclockwise. You know R, you know F friction, you know 6.94, so you can calculate the torque due to the gear, due to the engine, onto the axle. You don't know what the gear force is, you don't know what little r is, but you do know what the torque is, and I find roughly 300 newton meters. How much energy is in the car during these 7.5 seconds? Well, we have translational kinetic energy, that is the motion of the car and the wheels in x direction, and we have rotational kinetic energy, which is only in the wheels. The translational kinetic energy, which is 1/2 times the total mass, 4m, times v squared, which is this v of c, is the v of the car, it's the velocity of the axle, plus 4 wheels times 1/2 I of c, moment of inertia about c, times omega squared. And you know that V of c equals omega r because, and only because, there is pure rho. Otherwise this would not hold. And so you can calculate omega, and you have the total energy that is stored in rotation and in translation. Now comes the $64 question. Who did that work? Now you may think, since the only net force on the car is the friction, you may think that it is the frictional force. But that is not the case, because the point where the friction applies here, this point always stands still. So this frictional force can never do any work because it is not moving. But this force is moving. This force, think about this, I hold this rim of this, I don't like it, but of this wheelchair in my hand, and I move the force along the circumference of this inner circle with radius r. That is doing the work. So you can see really that the engine is going to do the work. And how much is that work? Well, that work is obviously the gear force times 2 pi r, which is the circumference of the inner circle, times the number of rotations that the wheel has made in the 7.5 seconds. And I will leave you to calculate what capital N is. And it's very easy, because there is no slip. And that should allow you very easily to calculate how many rotations the car has made. And I want you to check that indeed this product that I just calculated exactly equals the energy that I showed you before, which is the translational kinetic energy and the rotational kinetic energy. It's very important that you realize that these two indeed are the same.